Good morning. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Conference Committee on Senate File 4062. Of course, both the House and Senate members that have been selected for the conference committees are present, along with the staff. I'm looking forward to a good, robust discussion here. As you noticed, I'm sure you've all seen the document that has been agreed upon as far as committee meetings, when they will be. I guess it's from 1 to 4 on every day this week. Representative Hansen and I have discussed and agreed that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday will be out this week. For obvious reasons, we won't be meeting Friday, Saturday, and or Sunday. So with that, members, again, welcome. And I think we're going to start out with introductions. We'll start with the House members over there. Mr. Heintzman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Heintzman, representing
Greater Lakes. Welcome. How's that? No? Okay. There we go. And who's next?
Representative Lippert.
Representative Lippert, if you're there, welcome to the committee. I think you are.
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Todd Lippert from the Northfield area. Good to be with everyone.
Good. Thank you. Welcome. Representative Morrissey.
She was flying back into the state today, she is on her way. Representative Wasilek.
Go ahead, Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Amy Wasilek. I represent communities in the Northeast Metro, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee in the House.
Welcome. Staff?
Scotland Crocker, Committee Legislative Assistant for the Environment Committee.
Welcome. Did you do that? Wow.
Janelle Taylor with House
Welcome.
Research.
Brad Hagemeyer?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm Brad Hagemeyer with the House Fiscal Analysis Department.
Welcome again.
Hi, Peter Strohmeyer, Committee Administrator for the House.
Rick Hansen, serve as the chair for the Environment, Finance, and Natural Resources Policy Committee.
Senator Ingebrigtsen representing the Environmental Natural Resource Finance Committee on the Senate side.
Jesse McArdle, I'm the CA for the Senate Environment Committee on the Senate side.
Ben Stanley, I'm Senate counsel for the committee, and two of my colleagues who are double booked in the Ag Committee, I'll just introduce them. Dan Mueller is the Senate Committee Fiscal Analyst, and Laura Painter is the Legislative Analyst. They'll be joining us at some point.
Garrick Spenwin, I'm the Committee Legislative Assistant for Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Senator Bill Weber, Senate District 22 from the City of Luverne. I serve as the Vice Chair of the Environment Natural Resources Policy Committee and Legacy Finance.
State Senator Justin Eichhorn, Itasca, Cass, Beltrami Counties from Grand Rapids.
Ken Deacon, State Senator for District 4, which is all of Clay County, all of Norman County, and a portion of Becker County, including Detroit Lakes, and I also have the Moorhead area. Thanks.
And Senator Tomassoni.
David Tomassoni, Senate District 6. I am from Chisholm.
Welcome. Good to hear from you. Is there anybody else that I missed? I don't think so. All right. Members, what we're going to do is we're going to start out. I guess what we'll do probably is any opening comments at all that anybody has. And before we start out, I don't have a whole lot myself. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Ingebrigtsen. Well, we've been through this before, but not in person for a couple of years. So it's good to be back in this room. I think that will help facilitate getting to an agreement. Last time we were in this room, we were able to resolve our differences, and not everybody was able to get everything they wanted, but they were able to get things that they needed. So I am hopeful that we'll be able to come to a conclusion. It is going to be different because we are going to be kind of hybrid here, and when the House has the gavel, we'll be remote. So we'll be alternating back and forth. We are only 2 weeks left, and so I think we have to get moving, and I'm pleased to be starting today and working with Senator Ingebrigtsen. We can come to a conclusion.
Very good. I echo most of that, for sure. We are certainly, I think, better off when we're meeting face-to-face, but nevertheless, we're going to be working with what we are able to work with, and we certainly understand that. I think the public understands that as well. We are a significant difference apart here. There's no question about that. I don't think we have to mention that. So I hopefully we can get some things moving and agreeing to at least a few things. But I'm optimistic that we will get moving along a little bit more clear and for sure more transparent, I think, overall. So with that, any other members have any comments? See none. What we'll do, I think, right now is turn it over to Mr. Stanley. Mr. Stanley's going to go the side-by-side policy on the Senate side.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. We're going to be working from the documents. It's the Article 2 side-by-side. You can tell which one it is. At the bottom, it says page R1-Art2. And at the top of this document, on the left-hand side, you'll see the Senate language from the third engrossment of the bill. On the right-hand side, you'll see the House language from the second unofficial engrossment of the bill. And one thing I should note initially, normally the way this would work is Ms. Taylor and I would go back and forth as dictated by the changes, what changes were made to which statutes. But this year, because there were so many changes, so many differences, the reviser thought it made a little more sense to set out the Senate language separately from the House language, except where the provisions are more or less identical. And after conferring with Ms. Taylor, we decided that that might make it easier for us to do this walkthrough, so that's what we're going to do. I'll go through most of the Senate language, and then Ms. Taylor will go through most of the House language. And we're just going to touch on these at a fairly high level to begin with, and then we can answer any questions that the conferees have.
Mr. Stanley, I want to make sure everybody has a copy. Does everybody have a copy of that and ready to go? Okay. Sounds good.
All right. So beginning with Section 1 on the Senate side, this is a DNR policy item that just changes the month that the permitting efficiency report from DNR is due. Turning to page R2, Section 2 would prohibit the DNR from enforcing unadopted rules. Section 3 allows a current owner of an off-highway motorcycle to transfer ownership of that vehicle. This is one of several provisions that just changes. Right now, a registered owner can transfer ownership. This would change that to a current owner to acknowledge that sometimes the current owner isn't a registered owner. You'll see a couple more of those up ahead here. At the bottom of R2 is Section 4. This is the first of several DNR provisions that modernize the snowmobile registration decal regime. Section 4 is one of those, and I'm not going to go into that in great detail. They're all part of these DNR policy changes. Section 5 on page R3 is another, as is Section 6. Turning to R4, Section 8 is also a DNR snowmobile change. And then scooting back to Section 7, this is another one of those that allows current owners, not just registered owners, to transfer ownership, in this case of snowmobiles. Skipping ahead to page R5, Section 9. Actually, the change here is on the following page, on R6. This would allow road authorities to designate places where snowmobiles can cross divided highways. On page R7, Section 10 modifies the definition of ATVs. Section 11 authorizes current owners of ATVs to transfer them. This is the third of those three provisions I just mentioned. And then at the bottom of R7 is the first same provision. This is Senate Section 12 and House Section 10. This just modifies the Loose Line Trail to include a connection to the Greenleaf Lake State Recreation Area. Again, that's a same between the Senate and the House. On the next page, on this is page R8, Section 13 on the Senate side is a DNR policy provision that would allow DNR to set reservation policies for its facilities and programs. The bottom of that page, Senate Section 14 and House Section 20, these are identical. This would require payment for timber cut from state lands to be postmarked within 30 days rather than paid within 30 days. That's a DNR policy provision. On page R9, Senate Section 15, this sets timelines for completing environmental review and permitting of metallic mineral mining projects, and where those deadlines cannot be adhered to, it requires legislative notification of that fact. On page...
Is that also DNR?
No.
No.
Okay. On page R10 is Senate Section 16 that modifies the definition of a minnow to include suckers of all sizes. Section 17 on the Senate side and 22 on the House side are identical. These just modernize the definition of unloaded. This has been floating around for a few years now. Section 18 on the Senate side at the bottom of that page is different from Section 23 on the House side. What these sections do is expand the walk-in access program so that it's not just for hunting, but it also includes other purposes like bird watching, nature photography, and that sort of thing. The difference you can see on page R11 on lines 24.26 of the Senate side and 24.27. The way the statute currently reads is that in order to have a motorized vehicle on these lands, a person with disability also has to have a license to shoot from a stationary vehicle. The Senate language changes this in keeping with the rest of the changes in the section so that motorized use just has to be for cases where there is the person has a disability. The House language did not make this change, and so in order to have motorized vehicles as part of the walk-in access program, a person would still have to have this this license to shoot from a stationary vehicle under the House language. On the bottom of that page, page R11, Senate Section 19 and House Section 24 are the same. This modernizes the statute that allows that authorizes DNR to allow persons with disabilities to use motor vehicles and WMAs. Turning to the next page, Senate, and that's page R12. Senate Section 20 is a DNR policy bill provision that's been floating around for a few years that repeals a sunset of authority to leave deer stands in certain WMAs overnight. Section 21 at the bottom of R12 is another DNR policy section that allows a person to establish residency for game and fish purposes with an application for a driver's license or with tribal identification. Section 22 on the Senate side and Section 26 on the House side modernizes the statute that governs which firearms can be used to take big game and wolves. That's from the DNR policy bill. At the bottom of R13 is a Senate-only Section 23. This would require that ground blinds display blaze orange or pink during deer firearm season. At the bottom of R14 is Section 24, which prohibits new antler point restrictions. On R15, Section 25 would shrink the shotgun zone so that it encompasses only Dodge and Olmsted counties. Section 26 at the bottom of that page requires DNR to issue permits to relocate nuisance bears. Section 27 on R16 would allow scaring, chasing, et cetera, of deer and elk causing damage to agricultural crops. That's from DNR policy bill. The bottom of that page, Section 28, repeals the minnow importation ban. On R17 is Section 29, which allows two-line fishing on stretches of the Minnesota and Mississippi rivers. That's from the DNR policy bill. Section 30 on R17 authorizes importation of minnows under a permit issued by the DNR and subject to various health requirements. On R18 is Section 31, which prohibits revision of the public waters inventory from taking effect where a political subdivision objects. On R19, Section 32 is the first of several sections clarifying that the statutes at issue in the recent White Bear Lake decision do not prohibit the issuance of certain water appropriations permits. That's a mouthful of a sentence. On the next page, R20, Section 33 requires DNR to provide an analysis of the basis for denials of water appropriations permits where the denial is based on the impact to a calcareous fen. It also provides for review of that decision as well as a contested case hearing in certain cases. Moving on to R21, Section 34 allows appropriation of up to 4 million gallons a year from the Mount Simon Hinckley Aquifer for the purpose of growing trees, to facilitate the growth of trees. Section 35 prohibits DNR from modifying water use permits when those permits are transferred as part of the underlying real estate transfer. Section 36 provides that DNR must assess land value impacts before preparing groundwater management plans. Section 37 is another White Bear Lake provision. On R22 now, Section 38 limits the type of information that can be disseminated about the development of groundwater management plans, and again provides that land value impacts have to be part of that assessment. Section 39 on R23 on the Senate side and House Section 42 are different. They both define what sustainable is for purposes of issuing water appropriations permits for groundwater. The Senate language would say that it's sustainable where it will result in a less than 20% change from the median August stream flow. The House language would say it's sustainable where the recharge to the aquifer is sufficient to recharge, to replenish the groundwater in the aquifer. So that's a case where there's a difference between the two. Moving on to Senate Section 40 on that same page, this is another White Bear Lake provision, as is Section 41. Section 42 on R24 requires the well condition to be taken into account when validating a well interference claim. Section 43 on that same page, well, it begins on that page, is the first of several provisions that clarify that PCA's water fee setting and increase authority is subject to legislative approval. That section goes all the way to R28. And on R28 is Section 44, which extends to industrial wastewater permittees the same regulatory certainty that the legislature gave to municipal wastewater permittees a few years ago. Section 45 provides that SSTS tanks that have drainage holes drilled into them that have been repaired meet minimum standards for SSTS tanks. Section 46 is another PCA fee provision, as are Sections 47 and 48 on R29. And then Sections 49 through 53 concern the regulatory treatment of chemical plastics recycling. Those provisions begin on R29 and go through R31. And they just make clear that for chemical plastic recycling, the way that the statutes that would otherwise apply to that process and related facilities. Section 54 on R31 and on the Senate side and Section 55 on the House side on R31 are identical. This just modifies the frequency with which DNR has to submit its 3M reporting. Section 55 at the bottom of R31 carries over to R32. And this modifies PCA's permitting efficiency report in several ways. That provision carries through to R34, where you have Section 56, which is another PCA fee provision. That'll take you to R36, where Section 57 prohibits PCA from enforcing unadopted rules, much like the provision you saw earlier for DNR does. Section 58 is the first of two provisions that modify the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act to prohibit its use to challenge the water appropriations permits that are blessed by the other White Bear Lake sections. So that's Section 58 on R36 and 59 on R37. Also on R37, Section 60 is where it begins, but the change is on R38. This requires EAW petitioners to reside in the county where a proposed action will occur or in an adjoining county. And there's also a change in that same section on page R40 that would provide that a mandatory EAW is not required for projects affecting waters that are not in the public waters inventory. It would still allow a discretionary EAW or a petition-based EAW. Section 61 creates an account to promote special events in the state. And that carries through to R41, which so the first section there is Senate Section 62, House Section 73, and Senate Section 63 and House Section 74. These are both identical, and they modify the school trust lands director statute various ways. R43, Section 64 on the Senate side and 76 on the House side are identical, and this allows counties to use the proceeds from tax forfeited land sales to clean up blighted tax forfeited land. Section 65 on the Senate side on R44 and Section 77 on the House side, also beginning on R44, are different. And to see the change, you have to go to R45, where on the House side, line 79.3, you'll see that the House is proposing to increase from 72.43 to 97% the portion of lottery and lieu money that goes to the Heritage Enhancement Account and the Natural Resources Fund. And then to see the Senate proposal, which is different, you have to turn the page to R46. At the bottom of that page, you'll see that the Senate's proposing to place 1% of the money from the lottery in lieu that currently goes to the general fund in the new events promotion account that is being created by Section 61. And just to be clear, this is general fund. This is from the general fund portion of the lottery in lieu proceeds, not from the other portion. Moving to R47 on Senate Section 66, this extends from 2019 to 2025, the date by which PCA has to complete wild rice water quality standards rulemaking. The bottom of R47, Section 67, this is also related to White Bear Lake, and it prohibits reducing water appropriations near the lake until the rulemaking has been undertaken. On R48, Senate Section 68, this allows DNR to give preference to a software vendor that currently provides vehicle registration software when it issues an RFP to replace its vehicle registration system. At the bottom of that page, Section 69, this requires DNR and stakeholders to explore options for supplying the East Metro communities with drinking water in a sustainable and growth-supporting way. This is also related to White Bear Lake. Turning to R49, Section 70 requires DNR to issue permits and convey any interests that are required to ensure traveler safety on County State Aid Highway 13. The bottom of R49, Section 71 requires PCA to fill certain vacancies in its air permitting program. On R50, Section 72, this imposes interim provisions related to whole effluent toxicity that will be in place until PCA rulemaking is complete, which is required by a subsequent section I'll get to in a minute. Section 73 on R51 is part of the DNR's snowmobile decal changes, just providing for a transition while those changes are put into place. Section 74 on the Senate side on R51 and Section 84 on the House side are different. The Senate section requires includes provisions related to the snowmobile decal changes that are part of the DNR policy request. The House section does not include those because it does not include those sections from the DNR policy bill. Both the House and Senate section require or include provisions related to rulemaking in response to some changes made in earlier sections related to WMA access. So they're the same in that respect. They just differ in the presence or absence of the snowmobile decal rulemaking changes. The bottom of R51, Section 75, this requires PCA to seek EPA approval to not apply ambient air quality standards to permits where the permit is being issued solely to continue operations at existing emissions levels. Turning to R52, Section 76, this one goes along with Section 72, and this requires PCA to expand whole effluent toxicity provisions that currently apply in the Lake Superior Basin to sugar beet processors in the rest of the state. On that same page, Section 77 would provide that PCA can't require PFAS monitoring unless it covers the costs, and there are exceptions for certain things such as previously authorized or already in place monitoring. The bottom of that page, Section 78, requires the Red River Basin Commission to develop a feasibility assessment of adaptive phosphorus management on the Red River. Then turning to R53, Section 79 on the Senate side authorizes expansion of a structure in the West Newton Special Use District. And then Section 80 at the bottom of that page on the Senate side and Section 96 on the House side are different. The Senate section repeals language in connection with the minnow provisions that I went over earlier, as well as the DNR snowmobile changes and the APR, the ban on new APR. And Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Taylor at this point to continue.
Taylor.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to start on the bottom of R53, the House repealer, Section 96. Paragraph A would contain some repealers related to turtle sellers' license and turtle trapping. There's the House language will eliminate the turtle sellers' license. Paragraph B would repeal some provisions that will be replaced with new lead and cadmium provisions that were proposed by the governor that will appear later on in the bill.
Excuse me, Ms. Taylor, I think you have to pull it forward. Sure. There you are. Thank you.
Paragraph C at the top of R54 repeals some language being replaced by some new watercraft operators permit requirements that the House is carrying. Section 1 would establish some salary limits for the director of a new Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Office that's created later on in the bill. Section 2 and 3 on the House side would allow a city to adopt an ordinance that bans the use of pollinator lethal insecticides. Section 4 and R55 would establish a definition for coated agricultural seed. Section 5 on the bottom of that page, moving on to R56, would prohibit the use or sale of seed that's treated with a neonic. Section 6 would require the Commissioner of Agriculture to develop guidance on the proper disposal of seeds that have been treated with a neonic. Section 7 would establish some statewide goals for protecting, restoring, and enhancing the state's peat soils. And then Section 8 on the bottom of R56 would prohibit the use of certain insecticides on state lands, such as WMAs and state parks, state forests, and scientific and natural areas. Section 9 on the bottom of that page, continuing on to R57, would require the DNR to update its invasive species management plan by certain dates, and then require the plan to address the impacts of climate change on invasive species management. Section 11 is the first of several sections that increase the maximum per diem rate that members of certain councils, commissions, and boards would be able to be compensated with, and this section is for the Minnesota Zoological Board. Moving on to R58, Section 12 would create the new Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Office with purposes and duties that are similar to the recommendations from the Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Task Force. This is a longer section, so we can skip ahead to R60. On the bottom of that page, is Section 13, and then Section 13 through 18 are all provisions that would establish the new watercraft operator permit requirements, and that would be applicable to those that are 12 years of age and older, and that they would be phased in. Section 13 has the definitions. Sections 14 and 15, moving to page R62, would establish those requirements. Section 15 on R62 also establishes those requirements, and then 16 on R63 would require the DNR to establish some watercraft safety course and testing program, as well as a boater safety examination that would be administered by motorboat rental businesses. Section 17 on R63 is the requirement for the motorboat rental businesses to administer that boater safety exam. And then moving to R64, Section 18 is just some conforming changes related to the watercraft operator's permit. Section 19 on the top of R65 is another provision that increases the per diem rate. This one is for the Minnesota Forest Resources Council. Section 21 would establish a definition of native swan, and that would mean trumpeter and tundra swans. And this would be applicable to the game and fish statutes. Section 25 would remove the fee for the turtle seller's license that's eliminated in the bill. Section 27 would require the use of non-toxic shot when hunting small game on WMAs in the farmland zone, and it defines that zone. Section 28 on the bottom of R65 would establish new gross misdemeanor for certain violations of the game and fish laws that pertain to native swans. Moving to R66, Section 29 would require a recreational turtle license in order to take turtles, and it also states that turtles that are taken from the wild are for personal use and may not be resold. Section 30 would modify turtle licensing exemptions and make some conforming changes, and 31 and 32 would also make some conforming changes related to the elimination of the turtle seller's license. Section 33 on the bottom of R67 is another section that's increasing the per diem rates. This one is for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Moving to page R68, Section 34 is a provision that would allow Bowser to use its easement stewardship accounts for repairing and replacing structures. It would also allow the board to use additional funds beyond statutory limits in emergency cases for emergency repairs and replacements of water control structures. Moving to R70, Section 35 would statutorily create the lawns to leggings program that's receiving some additional funding in the House side. Section 36 would establish some soil health goals for the state. Section 37 would require Bowser to establish and maintain a drainage registry information portal with information on drainage proceedings and related information. Moving to R71, Section 38 would establish a soil health cost share program administered by Bowser. Moving to R72, Section 39 and also 40 are one of many sections from the DNR's proposal to provide some enhanced authority to enforce the state's water laws. Section 39 would add some additional authorities and duties. Section 40 would establish a duty of candor. Section 41 on R73 would require public meeting before issuing large water use permits. This is unrelated to the enforcement proposal by the DNR. This is a House proposal. Sections 43 and 44 are more provisions from the water law enforcement proposal. 43 would expand APO authority, and Section 44 would increase the maximum penalty amount to $40,000. Moving to R74, Section 45, this would require penalties to be forgiven if they're corrected, except for for repeat or serious violations. Section 46 is another section from the enforcement enhanced enforcement of water laws. This would allow for cumulative penalties. Section 47 is another enforcement section. This would provide some additional authorities to the DNR. And then moving to R77, section 48 on the bottom of that page, this is a PCA proposal from last year that would require the notice of certain pollutant discharges. The language has been modified since it was proposed originally from last year. Section on page R78, section 49 would require the PCA to hold public meetings prior to finalizing settlements greater than $25,000. On the bottom of that page, section 50 would establish a new multifamily building composting grant program to be administered by the PCA. And then we can skip ahead to R80, section 51. This would establish a new grant, zero waste grant program to be administered by the PCA. And then we can skip to R83, section 52. This would prohibit certain methods for disposing treated seed that has been treated with neonicotinoids. Section 53 is a provision from the governor's budget proposal. It would establish a new account that the agency could use to cover the administrative costs of their voluntary investigative and cleanup program. Moving to R84, section 54. This would change the date the PCA has to submit private well testing results in the East Metro from January to February. Section 56 on R85 is a technical provision related to some new environmental justice sections the House is proposing. Section 57 would add a definition of commissioner to Chapter 116. Sections 58 and 59 would establish a definition of environmental justice and environmental justice area for purposes of some new provisions the House is proposing. Sections 60 through 62 would establish definitions of microplastic, nanoplastic, and plastic in Chapter 116. Section 63 on the bottom of R86 would require air permit holders to annually report air toxic emissions. Section 64 and R87 would require cumulative impact and demographic analysis before issuing or renewing permits that impact environmental justice areas. And then moving to Section 65 on R89, this would specify the contents of those demographic analysis required. Then moving to R90, Section 66, this would require the PCA to determine whether approving a permit would cause or contribute to increased environmental or health impacts in an environmental justice area, and then if so, they would need to deny or place conditions on the permit. Section 67 and R91 would require feedlots with a capacity of 1,000 or more animal units to have a financial assurance that meets certain requirements. Section 68 on the bottom of R91 would require the PCA to annually compile a list of abandoned manure storage areas. Moving to R92, Section 69, this would require the PCA to determine the boundaries of environmental justice areas. Section 70 is another section that increases per diem rates. This one would be for the EQB. Section 71 on the bottom of the page would require an EIS or an EAW with emissions that impact an environmental justice area to have a demographic analysis. Section 72 on R93 is another section increasing per diem rates. This is for the citizen members of the LCCMR. Moving on to R94, Section 75, this is a requirement of the Department of Public Safety to maintain watercraft operator permit information and then include that information on driver's license and ID cards. Section 78 is from the governor's budget proposal. This would expand the bans on consumer products that contain lead and cadmium. And then at the bottom of R95, Section 979 would allow a county to allow the expansion or impose some regulations on non-conforming structures. This is similar to language allowed for municipalities. Sections 80, 81, 82, and 83 would establish some definitions related to lead service lines in Chapter 473. And then on the bottom of R96, Section 85 would establish a community air monitoring system pilot grant program in the Minneapolis. Then moving to R99, Section 86 would require that PCA to initiate some rulemaking to regulate air toxic emissions. Moving to R101, Section 87, this would establish the Pig's Eye Area Task Force, and they would be tasked with coordinating efforts to clean up the Pig's Eye landfill site, as well as provide recommendations. Section 88 on R102 would prohibit the renewal or transfer of turtle cellar licenses. Section 89 would require the PCA to adopt some rules for the safe disposal of seeds treated with neonics. And then Section 90 on the top of R103 would allow the DNR to designate swan resting areas in the state swan migration corridor. And then in those designated sites, the use of lead sinkers would be prohibited. This is a pilot program that would expire January 1st, 2026. On the bottom of R103 is Section 91. This would require the DNR to increase the restitution values for tundra and trumpeter swans. On R104, Section 92, this would allow the PCA to phase in the new feedlot financial assurance requirements established in the bill. Section 93 would require the PCA and delegated counties to report lists of abandoned manure storage areas, and then requires the PCA to submit the lists and recommendations to the legislature. On the bottom of R104, Section 94, continuing on to R105, would require the PCA to take certain actions that were recommended by the legislative auditor in their petroleum tank release program report, and then report back to the legislature. Section 95 on the bottom of R105 would require the PCA to develop a plan for a carpet stewardship program. And then that would take us to Article 3, which starts on the bottom of R106. Article 3 pertains to farm survey and chronic wasting disease. Section 1 would make location data for survey farms public. Section 2 does a number of things. It would require immediate notification of escaped farm survey if they're not returned within 24 hours. It would also allow licensed hunters to kill and possess an escaped cervidae, and then requires those that are killed to be tested for CWD at the owner's expense. It would also state that owners are liable for the costs associated with escaped cervidae. On Section 3 on the top of R108 would require fencing to prevent physical contact between farm cervidae. It would also require repairs of fencing to be done within 14 days. Section 4 would require double fencing for farmed white-tailed deer. And then Section 5 would require farmed white-tailed deer to be identified with certain information within 14 days of birth. Section 6 on R109 would prohibit new white-tailed deer farm registrations, but it does allow for certain sales or transfers to family members one time. Section 7 would prohibit a person from moving farmed white-tailed deer to another location. And then if you move to R110, it also adds a number of new requirements of owners and land when there's been a CWD infection, including requiring cooperation, requiring depopulation within 30 days. It also requires fencing to be maintained for 10 years and then would prohibit raising cervidae on property for 10 years. There's also some property transfer and county recording requirements. And then it does state that an owner is responsible for the proper disposal of animals. Section 8 would modify cervidae importation restrictions. Section 9 would require farmed white-tailed deer to be live tested for CWD by December 31st, 2022. And then Sections 10 and 11 would transfer the oversight of farm survey from the Board of Animal Health to the DNR. And that takes us to R112, which starts Article 4. These are a number of provisions related to PFAS. Sections 1 through 5 would ban the manufacture and sale of various consumer products that contain PFAS effective January 1st, 2025. Section 1 would do so for carpets, textiles, and related products. Section 2 would do that for cookware on the bottom of R113. Section 3 would do that for cosmetics. Moving to R114, Section 4 would do it for juvenile products, and there's a definition of that. Section 5 would do so for ski wax. And then on the bottom of R115, Section 6, this would require manufacturers of products that contain intentionally added PFAS to notify the PCA, and then it establishes what those notification requirements are. And then that takes us to page R117, Section 7. This would establish standards for labeling certain food or beverage products that, whether or not they are compostable, there'd be standards for that. And then on the bottom of R119, Sections 8, and then continuing on to the next page, Section 9, these would ban the manufacture and use of Class B firefighting foam that contains PFAS. Section 10 on the bottom of R120 would require the PCA to adopt some water quality standards for two different PFAS. Section 11 would require the Department of Health to amend the health risk limit for PFOS. And then that would conclude Article 2. And then I can move ahead to Article 3 on the Senate side and Article 5 on the House side. This is basically the lands bill, and most of the provisions are identical. I'm not going to go through section by section, but I'm just going to point out the non-technical differences.
Members, just collect your questions for when we're done with the going through the side by side. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair and members, if you want to go to R6, that'd be the first difference I want to point out.
Otherwise, before that, everything's the same.
Correct, Mr. Yeah. Chair. Yep, everything is identical until we get to the top of R6. You'll see it. There's some additional Senate language on Senate lines 79.6 and 79.7. This language would increase the maximum lease term for tax forfeited lands from 10 to 25 years, then increase the dollar amount threshold that's used to determine whether a public sale requirement is imposed from $12,000 to $50,000. And then again, and everything's identical until we get to R12. You'll see there's a house-only Section 10. This provision would allow the private sale of tax-forfeited land in Beltrami County. And then everything is identical until we get to R16. You'll see a Senate-only Section 15. This would allow DNR to convey certain surplus state property in Lake County to the city of Two Harbors. And then we can skip ahead to the last page of that article, R20. You'll see another House-only section. This one would allow the National Guard to exchange surplus state land with the city of Rosemont. And then that would conclude the policy walkthrough.
So, members, before we move into the appropriations, do we have any questions on the policies? Either side. Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, I do, but I think they're probably for the commissioner, one of the commissioners, so I'll wait till they're doing their testimony.
Okay, very good. And members, just understand they're going to be, as you notice on the agenda, they will be testifying at the end here, so you can certainly have your questions then for them if you have any. Any other questions? Okay, then we'll move on to Article number one, appropriations. We'll start out with, I believe we're going to start out with Mr. Mueller. I know he's been bouncing between two committees right now, but he's ready to go.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dan Mueller. I'm the fiscal analyst on the Environment Committee. Mr. Brad Hagemeyer from the House and I will walk through the spreadsheet. Let me see. Yeah, and I think Mr. Hagemeyer is going to start off dealing with the House positions with PCA, and then I'll jump in and we'll kind of go back and forth.
Okay, I understand that. That's page R1, Article 1.
Mr. Chairman, we'll be working off the side-by-side spreadsheet that Mr. Hagemeyer is showing on the screen. The spreadsheet is just, I believe it's about a six-page spreadsheet that just shows the change items on both bills. So we'll be just be walking through the spreadsheet right now.
Sure. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll take over if you don't mind.
Yes, go ahead.
I believe everyone can see the spreadsheet on the screen being shared right now. Just how the spreadsheet is set up, you'll see the first two columns here are the governor's revised recommendations. They're collapsed for biennial total. The next set of columns here is the Senate provisions for the current biennium. And then this set of columns in the middle will be the Senate provisions for the tails. And then on the right side, you'll see the House provisions for the current biennium, the change from the Senate, and then the House provisions for the tails and the change from the Senate again. I believe we'll just switch agency by agency here. And I'm not, if the House or Senate isn't carrying the governor's provision, I won't necessarily explain all of those. The first provision you'll see here on the House side is the adaptation action grants and water storage. This was, the House is carrying $10 million for this program. That's a reduced amount from what the governor had proposed, and there's a little bit of money in the tails for that as well. On line four is the agency operating increase. This is just a small general fund piece of $38,000 per year. When we get to the environmental fund and remediation fund, you'll see operating increases there as well. On line five is creating a community-based brownfield grant program for $1 million. This was a governor's recommendation that the House is carrying. On line seven is the PFAS community grants. This was a governor's recommendation and the House is carrying it at $2 million. Line 10 is the waste prevention recycling grants and loans. The House is carrying this at $10 million. The governor had just under $19 million for it. On line 11, you'll see the St. Louis River Mercury TMDL availability extension. The governor proposed this. The House and Senate both dealt with it differently. The House is canceling it, reappropriating it to comply with the budget rules. I believe the Senate is just extending it for a shorter period of time, also to comply with the budget rules. On line 12, 13, and 14, you'll see provisions related to the Pigs Eye landfill. That was $1.8 million. $800,000 of which is for the task force, and $1 million is for the preliminary cleanup assessment. On line 15, you'll see $50,000 for the petroleum tank release cleanup report. On line 16 is the feedlot permit financial assistance and inventory for $250,000 per year from the general fund. You'll also see a appropriation for the same amount in the environmental fund when I get to that point. Line 17 is county grants for abandoned feedlot and manure storage reports. And this was $700,000 one time. On line 18 is the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers training, and that'd be $250,000 one time. On line 19 is the multifamily building composting pilot program for $5 million. On line 20, you'll see environmental justice. There's a few pieces of this. This came from Representative Lee at House File 3146. The fiscal one was fully funded between the general fund and the environmental fund. You'll see it's $9,080,000 in the first year. And then when I get to the environmental fund, I'll explain how much is being appropriated in the tails. And there's revenue as well. On line 21, there's a statewide air quality monitoring program for $5 million. On line 22 is air monitoring equipment purchase of $540,000. On line 23 is air monitoring community grants for $500,000. And on line 24 is air emissions rulemaking for $500,000 one time. On line 25 is $1 million per year for the Get the Lead Out program at the Pollution Control Agency. On line 26 and 27 is seed disposal rulemaking and enforcement. There's $175,000 for the rulemaking and $100,000 per year for the disposal enforcement. On line 28 are micro and nanoplastics testing and protocols for $2 million. That's a one-time appropriation. And on line 29 is the zero waste provisions, and that'd be $1.5 million one time. In total, the House appropriated $51.533 million in FY23 and then $3,042,000 in the tails from the general fund to the Pollution Control Agency. Skipping down, we get to the environmental fund. The first change, again, was the agency operating increase. This was the governor's proposal. It's $4.167 million per year. On line 33 is increasing capital assistance program for grants to local governments. Again, this was a governor's proposal for $17,000. On line 34 is the restrict cadmium and lead in certain consumer products for $74,000 per year. Again, that was the governor's recommendation the House is carrying. On line 36 is a $150,000 one time for carpet product stewardship report. On line 37 is rules adoption for PFAS water quality standards, and that's $452,000. On line 38 and 39 is the appropriation, but it's in the tail, so it sets a base from the environmental fund for the PFAS requirements for the various products that Ms. Taylor listed that are included in the House bill. On line 40 is the disclosure of PFAS in certain products. That's $314,000 in the first year, $300,000, then $154,000 in the tails. On line 41 is a public hearing requirement for alleged violations, and this is $48,000 per year. Skipping to the next page, the first one you'll see is the feedlot permit financial assistance inventory, and that was $250,000 per year from the environmental fund, and that's on top of the $250,000 from the general fund. On line 43 is the environmental justice again. The general fund piece was $9,080,000. In FY24, it switches to the environmental fund of $8.979 million. And then in FY25, it's $8.6 million. Through the rulemaking process, the fees get set. So you'll also see down on line 65, the revenue of $8.63 million. So starting in FY25, the revenues and the appropriation offset for this program. That is all the changes from the environmental fund for the House, and in total it's $5.472 million in FY23 and $28.6 million in the tails. And you'll see here the Senate has some changes, but I'll wait until I get done with the Pollution Control Agency and Mr. Mueller can go through the Senate side. On line 52, 53, and 54, you'll see the remediation fund changes. The operating increase, again, is $543,000 from the remediation fund. And then on line 54, you'll see the petroleum tank release cleanup operating increase, which actually just gets transferred into the remediation fund and spent over there. So those two pieces are operating increase. And then you'll see $133,000 per year for railroad safety. In total, there's $1.5 $3 million per year from the remediation fund. On line 59, you'll see $90,000 of statutory spending out of the special revenue fund, and this was a new account created at the Pollution Control Agency for administering the Brownfield program. In total, there's $58.625 million of appropriations in FY23 to the Pollution Control Agency on the House side, and almost $35 million in the tails. On line 63, you'll see the revenue changes. The first one that the House has is line 65. Again, that's a revenue starting in 25 for the environmental justice provisions. On line 66, there's the 3M reporting changes. This was an agency recommendation. It just has a savings of $1,000. On line 68 and 69, you'll see the revenue changes related to the new Brownfield program account. And then again on line 70, the operating increase is a transfer in from the petrol fund to the remediation fund. And then on line 71, again, that's the St. Louis River Mercury TMDL extension, which I showed in the appropriations, but in order to comply with the budget rules, it's also canceled first and then reappropriated. And Mr. Chair, that is all the changes on the House side for the Pollution Control Agency. I'll let Mr. Mueller explain the Senate side.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll be working off the Senate columns that Mr. Hagemeyer showed, dealing with the Pollution Control Agency. The Senate did not have any appropriations or changes to the general fund so there's no change there. So we'll jump ahead to line 44 within the environmental fund. The Senate has a one-time $86,000 appropriation for Lake Township wastewater system design. The next item is $700,000 in addition to the base for the SCORE grants. Currently, there is about $18.45 million going out for SCORE grants. This would add $700,000 to that base and continue it on in the tails. The next item is $671,000 for whole effluent toxicity rulemaking. There's some policy sections that Mr. Stanley pointed out in the policy article that tie to this, so this would pay for the rulemaking. The next item is $50,000 from the Environmental Fund for an air permit study that would ask the PCA to look at how the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is handling the air permitting system within Region 5 of the EPA region, compare that to the other states. The next item is $250,000 for the Red River Basin Phosphorus Management. Again, there's a section in the policy article for this. The last item under Environmental Fund is $740,000. This would go to the Environmental Quality Board to have them sort of do the final part of the Section 404 permitting. And previously, a couple years ago, we had an appropriation that also went to the EQB to sort of do the front end of this. And this would sort of do the back end of it and have the state of Minnesota apply for to do get a permit or a waiver for the Section 404 permits. So the Senate spends $2.4957 million from the Environmental Fund in 23, and then $700,000 a year ongoing. Under the remediation fund, the Senate has one item. It's a $1.5 million appropriation to demolish the Williams School in the Lake of the Woods County. This is a school that has been tax forfeited and is now the land and the school building is state owned and has been unoccupied for school reasons since I believe 1973. So there's a request here to demolish the school, and it has some reason remediation fund is the school has some petroleum, it has been noted to have some petroleum leftover and asbestos. So the total PCA changes for the Senate is $3.997 million fiscal year 23 using just the Environmental Fund and Remediation Fund. And then $700,000 a year ongoing, those are with the SCORE grants. The Senate also has the 3M reporting changes that Mr. Hagemeyer noted, and that was in the governor's request. That just saves $1,000 per year, and that's on line 66. So that is it for the PCA. I will now move down to start off the Senate changes with the Department of Natural Resources. So we'll jump ahead on the spreadsheet. The Senate did not have any general fund changes with the Department of Natural Resources. So we have no changes the total on line 105. The House had $52.96 million, and Mr. Hagemeyer will go through those after I go through the Senate items. Under Game and Fish, the Senate had three items, and they're all appropriations from the Heritage Enhancement Account. We had $150,000 one-time for shooting sports facility grants. This is an additional amount. There's a currently a $250,000 base amount. This adds to there is a current first year appropriation for this, and then this adds a second year. The next item is calcareous fen monitoring. There's some policy that Mr. Stanley pointed out in the policy bill dealing with calcareous fens, and this would appropriate $387,000 ongoing from the Heritage Enhancement Account to monitor the calcareous fens. And then the last item the Senate has from the Game and Fish Fund is $496,000 to do the study that is tied to the White Bear Lake water levels provisions in the policy part of the bill. Next, we'll go to the Natural Resources Fund changes in the bill. Both the House and the Senate have the Voyager County ATV Trail $500,000 appropriation, and also the Prospector Trail $500,000 appropriation. These two come from the ATV account in the Natural Resources Fund. The Senate also has another appropriation of $447,000 for the Roseau ATV Trail resurfacing. And then the Senate carries $40,000 per year ongoing from the off-road highway vehicle account to start up an ambassador program in out of that account, and I would have a $40,000 a year ongoing cost. So the total amount through the Game and Fish Fund and the Natural Resources Fund in on the Senate side is $2.52 million. And then I'll also note the one revenue change the Senate has dealing with DNR is and this is also in the House, and it was also came from the governor. It's the we count a certain amount of revenue due to the lands bill, and this goes in the land acquisition account. So that is $1.616 million, and again, that's the same in both the House and the Senate. And now I'll go back to Mr. Hagemeyer, who can explain the House provisions.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will start back up on page 2, line 74, is the Department of Natural Resources. The first change the House had was the climate adaptation for natural lands and waters. The House is carrying $25 million for this purpose and has carve-outs of $10 million for public water access sites, $10 million for fish hatchery improvements, and $5 million for native plant restoration at state parks. The next change the House has is the ensure aggregate mapping for local governments. There's $300,000 the first year and then $100,000 per year ongoing for that purpose. Skipping down to line 88, you'll see restoring grasslands and wetlands and WMAs for carbon capture and storage. That House is carrying this at $5 million. On line 89, there's $250,000 for rough fish report. On line 90 is the Minnesota Swan Protection Act, and this would be used to designate those swan resting areas. And that's $1.4 million. On line 91 is groundwater storage funding of $421,000. On line 92, there's $30,000 for walleye stocking on the Rat Root River. On line 93 is $1.841 million for AIS grants. On line 94, you'll see farm survey requirements. There's no appropriation in 23, but this funds the fiscal note for some of the provisions starting in 25. It sets the base, it increases the base by $1.383 million. On line 95 is SNA maintenance funding of $3.3 million. On line 96 is ash tree replacement grants for $10,150,000. On line 97, there's $1 million for school tree planting grants. On line 98 is water use public meeting requirements, and this will be $1 million the first year and $250,000 ongoing. On line 99, there's $1 million for the elk reintroduction. On line 100 is $250,000 one time for the DNR to have an RFP for the RT quick testing. On line 101, there's $500,000 one time for chronic waste and disease response in the Grand Rapids area. On line 102 is $600,000 the first year and $300,000 per year ongoing for the No Child Left Inside grant program. On line 103 is a Conestillo mine pit infrastructure operation and maintenance funding. This would just be for the OMF operation and maintenance. It doesn't pay for the actual structure, but it's $850,000 one time and it's available for a while. On line 104 is $70,000 per year for the non-game wildlife program. In total, the House appropriates $52.962 million from the general fund to the DNR, and then you'll see the tails are $2.8 million. Skipping down to line 107 is the Game and Fish Fund. The only change the House had is $15,000 for signage related to the banning of non-toxic shot on certain WMAs. On line 113 is the start of the Natural Resources Fund, and Mr. Mueller explained the two trails that the House included. And then you'll see on line 117, the House also included $750,000 one time from the State Parks and Trails Lottery in lieu account. So in total, for all the funding sources, is $54.727 million to the DNR, and the tails are $2.8 million. The revenue changes, the first one, there's a little bit of lost revenue related to the turtle taking provisions included in the House language. And then Mr. Mueller explained the lands bill. On line 124 through 30, you'll see revenue changes. They're all related to the lottery and loot allocation change. I listed them here under the DNR. Not all of them are necessarily the DNR, but they're in the Natural Resources Fund, so I'm showing the revenue changes here. The House increased the allocation to 97%. That has a general fund cost of $11.85 million in the first year and then $12.2 million each year thereafter. And then you'll see on lines 125, 126, 127, 128, 129, the amount of revenue that would go into each of those accounts under the current funding formula. The Senate, you included a provision to create a new events promotion account. You'll see the revenue changes here for that as well. A general fund cost for that one, for the 1%, and then the amount of money, the $470,000 going into the promotions account. That is all there is for the DNR. I'll continue on with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. On line 134, the House included $10 million one time and a little bit of ongoing money for adaptation action grants and water storage. On line 135, the House is carrying the governor's request for $595,000 for the COVID unreimbursed costs. On line 136, there's $5 million for the Healthy Soil Program. On line 137, there's $125,000 the first year and slightly increasing amount each year in the tails for the support for a tribal liaison. On line 138, there's $10 million one time for a CRP state incentive. On line 139, there's $5 million the first year and $1.25 million each year thereafter for the lawns to legumes program. On line 140, there's $200,000 for a drainage registry. On line 141, there's $30 million one time for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. On line 142 and 143, there's $8 million for the conservation tree planting, and then there's a carve-out of $500,000 for invasive species management within that appropriation. In total, the House appropriates $68.92 million in FY23 to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And in the tails, it's just over $3.096 million. The Senate did not include any fiscal changes for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. So I'll continue down to line 146 is the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. There's an operating increase of $500,000 the first year and $250,000 per year ongoing out of the general fund. And that's the only change for the Conservation Corps. On line 150 is the start of the Metropolitan Council Parks and Water provisions. The mapping infrastructure, climate risk, and resiliency opportunities. This is a governor's recommendation the House is carrying at $2.5 million. On line 152 and 153, you'll see $2.5 million for inflow and infiltration work on publicly owned service lines, and then additional $2.5 million for privately owned lines. On line 154, you'll see lead service line replacement grants of $2.335 million one time. And on line 155, there's a general fund increase of $2.5 million one time for the parks within the Metropolitan Council. In total, there's $12.335 million from the general fund, all one time being appropriated to the Metropolitan Council. On line 158, you'll also see a $750,000 appropriation out of the lottery in lieu account for the Metropolitan Council Parks. In total, just over $13 million is being appropriated to that council. On line 162, you'll see the Zoological Board. There's a base adjustment in FY24 of $45,000 for prairie butterfly conservation. So going to the next page, on line 166 is the Science Museum. There's a one-time increase in FY23 of $500,000 from the general fund. On line 170 is Explore Minnesota Tourism. On line 171, the governor had recommended additional administrative capacity funding of $215,000 per year. The House includes this provision. And then line 173, you'll see the House has $10 million for tourism recovery grants, and that's one time. And then there's $250,000 for a grant to the Grand Portage Band for tourism. In total, the House appropriates $10,465,000 from the general fund for Explore Minnesota Tourism. And I see I have a typo here. This should be from Explore Minnesota Tourism. And I think Mr. Mueller can explain the changes for the Senate side on tourism.
Mr. Mueller.
Sure. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, the items of the Senate is changing here at the Board of Tourism. These are the only general fund changes the Senate has in the bill. The Senate appropriates $1 million one time for a large-scale events promotion proposal. Then tying back to the lottery in lieu revenue changes that Mr. Hagemeyer briefly talked about and that Mr. Stanley talked about in the policy part of the bill, the Senate creates a new account in the Natural Resources Fund and takes 1% of the lottery in lieu money that is currently going to the general fund and deposits it into a new events promotion account. So, and then this bill appropriates $450,000 out of that new account per year to do large-scale events promotions, and it would require that the money be split in promotions from metro, half of it going to the metro area and half of it going to the outstate areas. Again, so there's the cost of the general fund portion to the bill is the $1 million of one-time spending, and then the $470,000 per year that's going to the events promotion account. So that's it for the Senate side.
Mr. Chair, continuing on line 180, you saw in the policy language, the House had the creation of the Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Office. The bill provides $1.75 million the first year and $250,000 per year ongoing for that purpose. On line 185 is the U of M. There's on line 186 is the Soil Health Action Plan. It's $180,000 one time from the general fund. On line 189, you'll see the MLCAT repayment. There's a one-time repayment of $29,055,000 into that fund from the transfers that happened in the early 2000s. And that was an estimate provided by the Pollution Control Agency for that number. In total, you'll see the general fund appropriations of $228,200,000. And then you'll see the revenue changes as well, including the lost general fund revenue. The House has a net general fund for this bill of $240 million. And then on line 199, you'll see the other funds of expenditure of $9.6 million. So $249,600,000 is the FY23 appropriations included in the House bill. And then you'll see in the tails, the net general fund was $35 million for the House provisions, and then the other funds was $31.88 million. So total tails appropriation would be $66.88 million. And I can say the totals. On the Senate side, you'll see a line 193. You had the $1 million general fund appropriation for the Senate side. The lost general fund revenue of $470,000 that goes into that new account. Total net general fund for the Senate was $1.47 million in the current biennium, $980,000 in the tails. The other funds appropriation of just under $7 million and then $3.1 million in the tails. And that is all I have on this spreadsheet, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank the both of you. That was a lot of work. We appreciate that. I know there's going to be some questions here, members. You'll notice the Senate column is quite scant, to say the least, it being a non-budget year, and that's kind of the philosophical view that we took moving forward. Not so much I see in the House. If I could ask, really, what's the difference? I think it should be noted here, and it's right in front of us. But we're about and Mr. Mueller, maybe you can answer this as far as general net general fund change when it comes to general funding. What's the difference? I mean, we're $230 million off. Does that sound right?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, if you look at line number 197 on the spreadsheet, in fiscal year, like the House has a net spending or net general fund of $240 million. The Senate's 1.47 million. So the difference between, you can see in that change from Senate column, is $238.5 million in fiscal year 23, and then about a little over $34 million in the tails, that difference between the House and the Senate.
Okay.
On the general fund.
Thank you very much. Members, as you can see, we've got a ways to go here when it comes to financing. I'm wondering if there's anybody that has any other questions with regards to any questions for the presenters so far. Ms. Wasilek, Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not familiar with the so the $1 million that's going towards Minnesota sports and events. I don't see any, unless I missed it, I didn't see any language in the policy section beyond what's in the appropriation section. Is there a way that they're going to, that organization is going to decide what they spend the money on? Because I think it's a very, sports and events is a very broad sort of field. And so I'm just wondering if you have any sense, I don't know if you worked on that provision or someone else, but of sort of what criteria they have, if they get funding now, what they do with it, or how they figure out what sort of events and things would actually get that money.
Yeah, thank you for that question, because it is a new line. And Mr. Stanley, I'm wondering if you could help us out with the description of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, I think what you're asking about is Senate Section 61, which is on the Article 2 side-by-side, page R40 at the bottom. And that is the language that actually creates the events promotion account. Representative Wasilek, is that what you're asking about?
Representative Wasilek.
Yes, I think that's what I'm asking about. I'm looking at the language right now. So this part creates an account, but then there's in the appropriations language that appropriation, from my reading of it, goes to a specific organization. And so I'm just sort of confused about what's actually happening with that language and where that money is going.
So it, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Stanley.
It sounds like you're asking about language in Article 1. If that's the case, I would suggest you ask Mr. Mueller that question.
Mr. Mueller, can you help us out?
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Representative Wasilek, there is an appropriation language. It's on page R17 in Article 1 of the side-by-side. Yes, it is a one-time $1 million general fund appropriation. And it would be a grant to the Minnesota Sports and Events organization for them to promote large-scale sporting and other events to the state. This organization is an organization that works to bring some of the bigger events into the Minnesota, like, you know, the Final Four and things like that. So this would give them some one-time money to do some more promotions and events, trying to get more of these events into the state of Minnesota. This was a bill that was carried by Senator Rosen and brought to our committee. So it's sort of the two-part proposal, the $1 million one-time general fund for them to do, that would go directly to this organization. And then the ongoing money out of the new account isn't necessarily set up to this organization ongoing, but would be for the same purposes, for bringing events into Minnesota. And the other ongoing money would be split between metro and non-metro areas. This one-time money does not have that split.
Okay,
and just one follow-up, I guess, that sure. Just a comment. I think the $1 million appropriation that's going to this specific organization seems like something that we can do, but I'm just concerned that if we're creating an events promotion account as a separate account in the Natural Resources Fund, that would be something that I would want to, you know, we want to see that's actually about the environment and natural resources. So understanding that there's a lot of, like, outdoor and recreation enthusiasts in the state, and there are a lot of things that we do, but just understanding that that's going to be a separate account in the Natural Resources Fund, just wanting to make sure that that's actually related to sort of the environment and natural resources that we're talking about. So that's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you. I would ask Mr. Mueller with regards to if this was the appropriate place for such a program versus any other place.
Mr. Chairman, the reason why we put the new account in the Natural Resources Fund is Basically, to keep it into the jurisdiction of the Environment and Natural Resources committees and their jurisdiction. And the other accounts that come from this lottery in lieu are also part of the Natural Resources Fund, or the other part of it goes into the Game and Fish Fund. So that's the reason why this account right now in the Senate bill is in the Natural Resources Fund, more for a jurisdictional issue. Really, the account could exist anywhere because the money is coming from the offset of the general fund. But, you know, the money could go into as an account into actually any fund that would be under the jurisdiction of this committee.
Might I add also, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Mueller, that the events that are brought into either rural or metro Minnesota, large events, there's a significant amount of spending that goes on from those that are here, that come here to visit our state, and I would think probably very significant, and a certain amount of that sales tax that is expended turns around and comes right back into the environment. So I'm not sure that we can come up with a figure on what that is, but it's going to be a very large amount, and it was kind of exciting to talk about doing something like this because we stand to make some more money that goes directly into the environment. So, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, the line of logic on that is also why we put $10 million into local grants for tourism, because you put those dollars out in the communities, and as we're coming out of COVID, a number of the community festivals all across the state have suffered for not having attendance for a couple years, or maybe limited attendance. And so jump-starting tourism, not just with big events, not just for the big fish, but all the little fish that are out there who are trying to swim again, that's why we invested $10 million. And, you know, the $230 million difference, I think, is $230 million of opportunity because there is one-time money. We do have a budget surplus. And that budget surplus, particularly, I think, should be used to help help our state heal as we come out of COVID. And so, just like a big event, hundreds of little events where we can put money in for tourism are important. In addition, we have a lot of line items. You know, I know there's a lot of line items here and there's a lot of policy, but there's a reason for that. With that one-time money, we're trying to fix some past wrongs. And one of those was the Metropolitan Landfill Trust account, where money was taken by the legislature during a general fund shortfall with the promise that it would be paid back. Now would be the time where we could pay that back. And, Mr. Chair and other members, if you pay it back now, you don't have to listen to us talk about it year after year after year. As it keeps going on, it would be an opportunity to pay that back. In addition, around the same time, the lottery in lieu of, and you mentioned that for tourism, that was cut back from its original intent. So restoring that, that's where most of our tails money goes, is restoring that back to the way it was almost 20 years ago. And that money, we're not tinkering of where it goes. We keep the formula the same, but we're putting money into the program. Another big ticket item is the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, one-time money. To maximize some of the federal dollars that are there. We know that our soil and water conservation districts can make that program work. They have. They can get the job done. So those are some of the big ticket items. We have a lot of things in here, and we had hearings, we had bills, and that's what's in front of us. I know the gulf is kind of wide and deep between us on the amount of money. But like I said earlier, I think there are things that hopefully we can come together on, both on the money and on the policy. I know our agencies are eager give us their thoughts, and so maybe if there aren't any other questions, Mr. Chair, we could go to them.
Yeah, any other questions, members? Representative Wozlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one quick question. I think this would probably be better directed at Mr. Mueller. There's some funding for PFAS related items in the Senate bill. And I'm wondering if I'm looking at the language that's not clear to me, in those appropriations on page R26 triple one, It's not clear to me whether those appropriations could be used for the monitoring, for the PFAS monitoring plan. So I know the Senate bill requires the MPCA to pay for the PFAS monitoring of the facilities that it's moving forward with. And I'm just wondering if I'm reading the language, I'm not seeing language there, but if any of that money could be used for those PFAS monitoring purposes, or if those PFAS appropriations are more specific to certain things and wouldn't be available to be used.
Mr. Mueller, can you handle that one?
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Representative Wozlik, I think you're looking at something that's in the, let's see here, page R26, did you say?
Yes, that's where the I think it starts on R26 and goes to R28. So the last couple pages of the appropriations, Article 1. So that's what I'm looking at. I see the language there, but I don't know if that language that's tied to the appropriations would mean that some of that funding could be used for the PFAS monitoring, or if that's all just for such specific purposes that it would not be able to be used for the PFAS monitoring.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wozlik, the language that's on the Senate side on page R26 and on, that's all from last year's budget bill. So we're not making any new changes or any new appropriations for PFAS. We just made one change and that's on page R27. That's where we made the appropriation for the St. Louis River TMDL available until June 23rd. So we didn't make any other changes to the existing PFAS appropriations on the Senate side. We pulled this section into the bill just to make that one change to the one appropriation. But otherwise, we didn't make any changes regarding what the PCA could spend the PFAS money on. There is something in the policy part of the article that deals with whether with the new PFAS plan that PCA has about whether whether any of the money has to go for monitoring at the local level. And Mr. Stanley can talk about that, but that language on the Senate side is existing law.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Sure.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Hansen's point about COVID, you know, I think during the pandemic, a lot of Minnesotans either rediscovered their love for the great outdoors or found first-time love for the great outdoors, which is wonderful. But one of the things that we've seen is a lot of new boats being purchased and being used on lakes all around our state. Which is great, but I wanted to make sure, did I see correctly that the watercraft operator permit, is that in the Senate bill as well as the House bill?
No, it's not. It's not in the Senate bill.
Okay. Because I do think there was a really interesting article in the Star Tribune this morning written by Tom Horner, who some of you may recall ran for governor at one point, about attracting, you know, as we face our workforce shortages, attracting young people to come to Minnesota. And one of the great draws is our water. And we're in this moment where there are a lot of threats to our water. And I'm concerned that it seems like there's some relaxing of permitting around protecting our water on the Senate side. And I had two hopefully short questions, and I hope this is the appropriate time to ask about two provisions in the Senate bill. One is about the final part of the Section 404 permit study. Could someone just very briefly clarify what that provision is about?
Mr. Stanley, if you could help us out.
Or, Mr. Chairman, I can probably do that.
Mr. Mueller.
It's in the appropriation article on page R9. The Senate would appropriate $740,000 to the EQB to develop and assemble the material required under the Code of Federal Regulations to assume the Section 401 permitting. Like I mentioned earlier, both the House and the Senate had appropriated money to the EQB to do some front-end work on the Section 404 permitting. And the reason why the Senate has this appropriated to the EQB is Section 404 permitting affects the Natural Resources, PCA, and Bowser. And so we chose the EQB for this appropriation because the members of the heads of those agencies are all part of the EQB. So they must work on developing the material and what other changes are must be made in state law and rules that would have the state assume the Section 404 permitting. And then it would require the state under the Board of Water and Soil Resources to make an application for the assumption of these permitting by June 30th, 2025.
Does that answer your question?
I think so, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And then just one other quick question, if I may.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The air permit study to look at the way EPA Region 5 manages it, I'm hoping to understand where that's coming from and what it's about.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members, this was a Senator Ingebrigtsen bill. This was a request by to have the PCA look at the air permitting requirements within the state and how it differs from the other states that are part of the Region 5 in the Region 5 EPA area. And the language on page R2 outlines the things that they would want the PCA to look at, such as the what funding sources are used and fees are used to fund the air permitting system, and how these fees and the cost of the permitting system have changed over the last 20 years. And like I said, you can see that the number of items that this study is supposed to look at is on page R2 and R3 of the appropriation bill. And like I said, this was a request that Senator Ingebrigtsen had in one of his policy bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Weber.
I was just thinking about your question that you posed, Mr. Chairman. You know, with the disparity that exists in our two bills, how do we resolve that substantial of a difference, in your opinion?
Well, I think we'll be finding that out very quickly, actually. You know, everybody's got a definition of what to do with all the money, and it seems like the folks on the other side of the aisle look at this, not only here, but many other budgets, as an opportunity to spend probably more money than we should have collected. And that's the philosophical difference. So I'm not sure how we're going to come to a resolution here today. I suspect that there's going to be hopefully a lot of I'm not sure. We don't have targets. We have not received targets. I don't expect we're going to receive anything more in the near future. At least I'm not hearing that from folks in our caucus and or the finance folks or leadership. So we're a long ways off. We really are. I see lots of spending here that I've never seen before, and this is not a budget year. Now that may sound like sound a little goofy to some people that we have all this money and we're not going to spend it, but there is a real difference on as to what we should be doing with those dollars. If these programs that are here that are put in by the House that are literally millions of dollars worth of new spending, it would seem to me that would be a good place would be during a budget year, and this is not. So that's why you see us holding as strong as we have on it being a non-budget year. And, you know, there's things in here, environmental justice for one. I look at that, and I guess that's going to be one of my questions that I ask. Where does that come from? How do we go about defining that? And is that something that, is something that's fairly new on the horizon? I know we've had discussions in the past about air quality monitoring, and we have, I think, agreed to do a lot of air quality monitoring in the state of Minnesota. However, I'm not sure where the environmental justice portion comes in. I don't think it's a real surprise that last year I would not allow, at least I didn't agree to any of that kind of language, and I I would like to know where that's coming from, and if we're going to be dealing with this, you know, if you put it in statute, you put something like that in statute, it never goes away. And really and truly, what does it mean, and how much money do we spend on that? That's just one area. With regards to tourism, I'm pretty excited about this new large thing, big events thing. I mean, I look for it to be a real plug for the state of Minnesota, as well as the environment, to reap some real benefits off of this. So I think it's a real good thing, and that's really basically the only thing we have. The only thing we have in this budget is that from general fund money. And so long question with a long answer. I'm not sure where we go. That'll be one of the questions that I ask the guy sitting to the right of me eventually here. And we'll be doing that, I think, real quickly. But if we don't have any other questions, I think we should really get with our commissioners. They've been very patient with us. And you may have some questions. Are there any other questions about what we've done so far before we move to the commissioners? Well, we'll start out with the DNR commissioner. Commissioner Strawman and Assistant Commissioner Meyer. Now, members, I believe everybody has received during the process letters from the administration's commissioners, and this is going to be just a quick overview of what your thoughts are, commissioners, and stand for some questions. So thank you for coming. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm Sarah Strowman. I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and with me is Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer. I'm going to make a few comments on the bills and the work ahead of us here in the conference committee, and then Assistant Commissioner Meyer and I are both happy to answer any questions. First of all, I want to say thank you to Chair Ingebrigtsen and Chair Hansen, and to your committees for the work done thus far on these bills. There's a lot of good policy and investment in both of these bills, and there is work yet to be done, as you all were just discussing. Mr. Chair, as you noted, we did submit a letter to the conference committee, and it provides quite a bit of detail on the things that we hope to see both investment-wise and policy-wise in the bill, and the items on which we have concerns. And so I am not going to read the letter to you, but happy to answer any questions. What I do want to highlight is the opportunity for investments that we see in this bill. And we know, and we talked early on in this session, that the governor and lieutenant governor put forward an ambitious budget to move Minnesota forward. And that ambitious budget was really a reflection of a desire to capitalize on the opportunity that we have here in the state of Minnesota, given our financial situation and given the degree to which we are seeing Minnesotans use and place value on our outdoor spaces and our outdoor recreation infrastructure. This really is a critical time, and I understand that it is not a budget year. But what we have proposed are one-time investments in our infrastructure and in our resources, investments that we have not seen in a generation. And it really is about meeting the moment for Minnesotans at the time that they are using these resources the most, providing that reinvestment back so that they can continue to use them today and that future generations can continue to use them and enjoy them and value them. So there are a few non-biennial budget type budget items that I do want to highlight here that we would strongly urge the conference committee to include in the final bill. The first is our deficiency for our enforcement division. This is a $1.7 million deficiency. This is specifically due to public safety activities that have occurred since the last biennial budget was passed, and that those activities have occurred, dollars have been expended, and so this would be the opportunity to address that deficiency. That public safety work was general public safety work to help secure general state assets. It is not something that we can use game and fish dollars to pay for those activities. It is essential that we have general fund dollars to pay for that. The second area of investment that I would highlight relates to broadband costs. And as everyone on this committee knows, there is still ongoing discussion about investment in broadband to ensure that that service is available across Minnesota. If that is funded, if that initiative goes forward and the desire is to accelerate the expansion of broadband, there are costs that DNR will need to cover to timely process the utility licenses to cross state lands. And so we would ask you to consider that as part of that initiative. I will note that both of those items, the enforcement deficiency and the broadband costs, could be included in other bills. I know there's an ag housing broadband bill and obviously a public safety bill, but we would ask that those costs, which are real and either have been realized or will be realized as part of those other initiatives, be included either in this bill or elsewhere. And then, Mr. Chair and members, I would call attention to the investments that the governor proposed in land, water, and infrastructure, our outdoor recreation infrastructure. These are investments in restoration of wetlands and grasslands that not only provide critical habitat, but provide important resilience against climate change and recreational opportunities. There are investments proposed in modernizing our fish hatcheries and our public water access sites. We are on the eve almost here of Minnesota's walleye opener, and we will soon see the enjoyment that Minnesotans get out of the stocking efforts that our hatcheries provide and the abundant public water access that our access ramps provide. And that infrastructure, as we've talked about before, is dated. It is not serving our communities today, and so it is an opportunity and a need to invest in those to ensure that they continue to function and provide those services into the future. There are other items such as acquisition of public lands, replacing culverts and restoring streams, upgrading state park roads and trails. I know we've talked many times about the extreme increase in park and trail visitation over the last couple years. That continues. And enhance forest management assistance to private woodland owners. Mr. Chair, I think with that, in highlighting those investments that, again, we would ask the conference committee to strongly consider, I will just say that we very much look forward to working with all of you on the policy items as well as these investment opportunities. And again, we're happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Mr. Meyer, before any questions, if you have any comments.
Mr. Chairman, members, no, the commissioner did a great job.
Members, any questions? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to comment to the commissioner. You know, I have a letter here from early April when you talked about the Senate's bill. And some of the things that you are against, and one of them was a County State 813 in Murray County, which is a road that connects certain islands in Lake Chautauqua. And that's my bill. And the reason I have a bill is because you visited that site 2 years ago last September. We talked about the issue as it relates to the need for additional right-of-way to widen that road because it is a safety hazard. A highway consultant considers that the most dangerous stretch of county road in the entire county. And yet here we are, over 2.5 years later, and there's been no progress from your agency regarding that issue. And the county had visited with your agency sometime before that. You know, part of the reason, Commissioner, that we have some of these things here is because an unwillingness or an inability of your agency to deal with the issues we have in our districts. We don't have a choice but to come to the legislature and try and create a solution to the problem. Can you sit there and tell me when your people
will come up with a solution to that issue, because they haven't done it for almost 4 or 5 years.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, I think Assistant Commissioner Meyer has some additional information.
Meyer, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber, thank you very much. And Senator Weber, you are right. Our letter does mention it. It was on page 7 of that letter dated in April. The one thing we did mention is that the environmental assessment worksheet developed for the project did not sufficiently identify project impacts or consider alternative designs. We've been working very closely with the county engineers. Our regional director has been working with them. I think it's a chicken or an egg kind of question. Once the money is secured, the project will get developed. So we will work with you to get the money for the project, and we will plan it to be as wide as it possibly can be. And there's also Army Corps of Engineer approval that needs to happen as well. So it's working together to accomplish these difficult projects is what we do. As you know, we've been talking about this for a while. We want to get it accomplished as well. So we look forward to working with you.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Weber.
Well, and the end yet, last fall, during a heavy rainstorm, a van with an elderly couple drove off that road into the lake and very narrowly avoided a double death as a result of that road and the unsafe situation that it creates. And you mentioned how much more people are coming to the lakes and what have you. And that problem is only going to get worse with the traffic, with the campgrounds, the motels, the residents that are on those islands. And you know, the chicken or the egg, you know, quite frankly, it's time for both of them to come forward. And if it has to be one or the other, then at least have the process or the solution as far as that, the construction of that road there, so that when the money becomes available, they can actually get the job done. But, you know, I grow very tired of coming to you year after year after year the same with the same issues and never finding a solution to that problem. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner, I do have a couple of questions with regards to the enforcement money that you're asking for here. In the past, that has been paid for, correct? I mean, this, when they were called in back 2 years ago, I know there was an extended amount of period of time when the COs were called upon to support the police that were dealing with riots in the metro area here. So that has been paid for in the past, I believe. I think that was a separate appropriation, probably coming from leadership somehow. I don't know that it ever came. I guess it did come to our budget and was expended. And also, I know that some of the equipment that you've purchased has been purchased with an agreement, I think, from the business folks out in the with regards to the enforcing out on the pipelines. That has been taken care of a couple of years ago. The broadband thing, I'm a little concerned about that, and I don't know if we talked or not about that. I know there's always been funding, and I think bipartisanly, I think we've been doing a pretty good job, it seems to me, of coming up with dollars. In fact, I had one of the folks that actually applies for those dollars say, you know, don't overspend because we can only handle so much a year, not more than $35 to $40 million. Not too many people come here and say, don't do that, don't give us more money. But it's realistically, that's what they can handle. So I'm wondering, if you're talking about permitting for broadband, why wouldn't, and maybe you already have, why wouldn't you be looking at the whole broadband appropriation to handle that as well, instead of coming out of your budget? And I understand you have to permit it. I understand that, because it's going to be going through places that are going to could potentially affect the environment. Have you looked into that at all, or? As far as the funding being added on to their appropriation?
Mr. Chair, two things I will say. First of all, the enforcement deficiency, you are correct that last year during the biennial budget discussions, we addressed a deficiency from those years, from the civil unrest in the Twin Cities area, the legislature also decided to reimburse the Department of Public Safety and the DNR for Line 3 costs through the Enbridge fund that had been set up through the PUC. So those items were taken care of. The deficiency that we're asking for this year is unrelated to the costs that were covered last year in the biennial budget. Unfortunately, our folks have been called again in recent months, and so this is a new deficiency that we did not anticipate last biennial budget. It was not part of the activities that were covered last time. So that is something that does need to be addressed. It is a cost of $1.7 million that our enforcement division has incurred this year, and we need to address it somehow. For the expansion of broadband, you're correct. It could be dealt with in different ways. The issue here is that, as the governor has proposed, and I think as the legislature, both bodies have been discussing, to accelerate the expansion of broadband across the state for a whole host of reasons, part of the costs of that package are making sure that DNR can process that accelerated rate of applications coming in. And so, yes, when the governor proposed the budget, it was part of that package, but what he did was put it in, because it's a DNR line item, put it in the environment piece of the budget. So it is possible, right, as it could be added in the broadband piece, whatever bill is carrying the rest of that package, or it could be separate here. Same with the public safety, the enforcement deficiency could go into a public safety bill to cover, I'm assuming State Patrol has some costs as well, and us. But right now, the governor had carried those in the environment portion of his budget. So that's where they are sitting in the governor's proposal. I think we are open to, you know, different places where they could be, but we do need to make sure they're covered somewhere.
Sure. And that's something I think that can be worked out, it seems to me. You know, I think if you think about it, broadband would include the permitting process as well. So. One second, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on the enforcement dollars, what were they called for? I don't recall. I don't know if the members know that. Was it capital security? Was there some problem?
Mr. Chairman, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner DNR. The work involved activities they were called in for after July 1st for the rest of this calendar year, securing and protecting the Capitol in particular. Okay. I can provide the committee with a list of dates that those activities are covered under.
And I'm assuming that's when the fence was up and now it's down, so that's basically ended. Okay. And when it comes to the hatcheries and the lake accesses, I think there's a fairly significant ask in the bonding committee by the DNR. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, the governor's budget that was initially put out included investment from both the capital side, the bonding side, and the general fund side. So our proposal was $10 million for hatcheries out of general fund, $10 million for hatcheries in the bonding bill, same for public water access sites, $10 million of general fund spending, and $10 million in the bonding bill.
Okay. So where did I come up with the $60 million ask? Is that something that?
Mr. Chair, the $60 million ask, I think, is the number that the group MinFish has put forward for hatcheries. Sure. That is the total dollar amount of needs in our hatcheries system. So that's where they got that Very number good. From. That is a DNR. That's our total need for
Thank
hatcheries.
Thank you. I just wanted to make that clear. Now I do recall.
Thank you.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Stroman, thank you for advocating on behalf of all Minnesotans. You know, having been through this for a while, often there's advocacy about individual districts and the needs of individuals in individuals' districts. And the opportunity here with our budget, with our responsibility as legislators, is for the whole as well, and advocating for those who may not have a voice here. And so I think you've done a good job on that. To the issue of waiting till next year, because I've heard that a lot, you know, and my response is we're paid to work every day here. But waiting till next year, I don't think the pests get the memo, you know, whether they're emerald ash borer or whether they're a disease or whether they're an aquatic invasive species. They don't wait till next year. They don't get that message. They keep coming. And so I think there's been even activity since we've met last in committee. Could you highlight the conference committee, what's happened in Grand Rapids? I think a sharpshooter had another positive chronic wasting disease deer. If you could maybe highlight what's happened and what is happening with CWD in the conifer area.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Chair Hansen, Assistant Commissioner Meyer is our lead on CWD, so I'm going to go ahead and let him answer that. But the short answer is yes, you are correct. We did find an additional positive in Grand Rapids, and chronic wasting disease is an example of one of those issues that continues to evolve. I would say even in our infrastructure too, we're now again, the ice is going out of lakes. We are seeing the shape that our ramps are in. It is going to be fishing opener in a week. People are getting their bones out of storage, and they're the phone is going to start ringing here in the next week with calls about ramps that have been damaged due to ice heaves or fallen lake levels or whatever the issue might be. So, yes, the management goes on year after year. The investment is certainly needed now, but I'll sorry for the digression here. I'll let Assistant Commissioner Meyer talk about the CWD positives in Grand Rapids specifically.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Chairman Hansen, thank you for the question. It has been. I was trying to find the dates, but it was last committee deadline was March 25th, roughly. Since that time, we identified found a deer that was deceased in someone's yard. They called us. We brought that in and tested it. It was positive for CWD. We right basically downtown Grand Rapids area almost. If you're familiar with that area, as you come in 169 and 2 there, there's a lot of open space of the Forest History Center. Many of you may have seen that in that general complex area. A lot of deer living up there. We immediately began contacting USDA, which is the headquartered right there, Wildlife Services, and began a depopulation scenario. Took about, 55 deer that first kind of couple of weeks. It was just the right time of the snow was starting to melt. Deer were still congregated. We were able to use some methods that we used to take those animals down humanely. Tested all of them. One more came back positive. Not to be surprised by that. These were does. They are yarded up very close together. That's our reason for such a high culling activity, was to try to get as many of those deer as possible. We haven't found any more positive deer, but we are concerned about the area, keeping the area in our sights as we prepare for the surveillance and monitoring into this fall. We're working to put that together, also working with stakeholders to make sure that we all are understanding and meeting each other's needs as far as testing goes. And we look forward to sharing those opportunities with you in the coming weeks and months of what next year will look like. But it will be a lot of surveillance, a lot of monitoring. We're trying to figure out how to do things better to get more samples in. We've had a lot of conversation, Chairman Hansen, and your committee, about how do we provide the opportunity for all Minnesotans to have their deer tested, not just people who may be in a zone or not. We're looking to implement that this session or this season and hopefully get more information. We are not done with this battle by any means, right? It's in sometimes an infancy, a beginning where we're at, but we do not want to take our foot off the gas pedal, so to speak, and become like Wisconsin. The 500,000 deer hunters that we have in Minnesota every year expect a healthy and populated deer herd. Now, the population is a little bit more challenging sometimes in certain areas of the state, but people want to have a healthy wild deer herd to hunt, and that's what our goal is, to try to follow, do everything we can.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I was walking to coffee shop yesterday, and every time I passed an ash tree, it was shredded because there had been so many ash borers that the birds had been working on. There was bark all over on the ground. Where there weren't ash trees, there were stumps. I see that throughout many communities. We invested a significant amount of money. It doesn't matter where in Minnesota you are, emerald ash borer is there and has an impact. And so I don't think the ash borers are going to wait till next year for funding. How quickly, and what was the backlog on the grants that we provided during the normal budget process last year? how many communities applied for those grants, and how quickly did they go out?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Chair Hansen, we'll have to get back to the committee with those numbers. We have them. We just don't have them with us at the moment.
And then one final follow comment. Up. Sure. And then we have some money in here for aquatic invasive species. Is there demand for additional funds for aquatic invasive species? Seems to be popular.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair Ingebrigtsen and Chair Hansen, there's always demand for aquatic invasive species grants and the emerald ash borer and shade tree grants as well. You know, it's something that I always like to remind folks, our mission at DNR says we work with Minnesotans and then to carry out our mission, and those are two places where we truly do work with Minnesotans, whether it's lake home associations or local governments on the AIS side, or it's local communities on the tree side. It is a place where we can come together as Minnesotans and work on these issues and do something positive.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just go back to one point I want to make sure the committee understands related to our public water accesses and our fish hatcheries. Boating in Minnesota is a $3.1 billion industry a year. Fishing is almost $3 billion a year. Those two activities receive zero general fund support for those dollars that they're putting into the general fund. Again, it's $3.1 billion and $3 billion. And all the taxes generated off of that, none of that goes back to those programs. So it's just critical that we keep that in mind as we look at these resources that we have and try to figure out how can we maintain them for the people. We've been in front of this body before talking about water recreation fee increases. I know people don't want to talk about raising fees, but those dollars would be used for our public access, rehabilitation, repair. And I just want to make sure people understand we aren't getting anything back for the money that they put into the economy.
Okay, members, any other questions? The only other question, and I'll finish with this, and more of a comment. We really certainly appreciate your folks being available for us when we ask, and look forward to continued cooperation as we get through this conference committee. Thank you.
Thank you. We look forward to working with the committee as well.
Next, we'll call on the commissioner from the MPCA. Ms. Kessler, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to be with you.
And with you, you have?
For the record, I'm Katrina Kessler, Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and with me today is Tom Johnson, our Government Relations Director, and we're happy to be here. And off the bat, I'll just say thank you to Chair Ingebrigtsen and Chair Hansen and members of the committee for all the work that you've done to get to this point. We appreciate the ability to provide some brief remarks today. I believe that we submitted a letter, and hopefully it made it into your packets, and we also submitted letters previously to both the House and the Senate, and those contain more details, and we're happy to answer questions as well. I'm just going to talk about a couple issues. The first, wanting to make sure that we meet this moment related to the federal funds that are coming to Minnesota. It's really important to highlight that this opportunity is once in a generation, and we want to make sure that investments that we can make at the state level to be prepared and to be competitive and to have our communities be prepared and competitive, that we don't want to miss that. So we prioritized ideas similar to what you heard from Commissioner Stroman that are one-time investments to help communities be fully prepared for federal funds. Most of the projects that we are aware of, the infrastructure projects, require some sort of planning and pre-work. And in many cases, the planning and pre-work investment has not been done. And we're hearing from local leaders that they are looking for funds to help with that. So the investments that we're asking for help meet those needs. And we recognize that some of those needs could end up in other bills, such as the bonding or transportation bill, but there are some needs that we see really are unique to the Environment Committee. And three that I'll call out specifically are PFAS, which we in the House version of the bill shows one of the governor's recommendations shows up, which would allow communities to look for PFAS sources upstream and be prepared with plans to mitigate and reduce sources that could then help them be prepared to take advantage of federal funds to enhance treatment if necessary. Secondly, we've called for pass-through grants to wastewater treatment facilities that can do the planning and pre-work around some of these really difficult pollutants, and again, put plans together to leverage some of those state revolving fund dollars through the IIJA investment. And finally, we've asked for climate adaptation grant funding, and these dollars could be specifically used for communities to develop plans and to put engineering specifications around their unique priorities that they then could get additional funding, perhaps from the state, but more likely from the feds, again, through the federal infrastructure dollars. The second thing I wanted to highlight today is the MPCA's operating increase. I will note that of the more than $5 million that we are asking for, only $38,000 comes from the general fund. And I will say off the bat that we always make an effort to prioritize state or staff time and budgets to the most urgent needs. And when we make an operating increase such as this one or request for an operating, it is not because we want to do extra work. It is to actually just meet our state and federal requirements. What EPA has told us we must do and what the state legislature and you all have expected of us. This is the agency's core work, and we pay the staff to do this. Like a business, we are facing increasing cost. Contracts that were ratified since the budget was funded last session have increased the costs, such at this time, we are facing a deficit such that if we cannot get the operating increase, positions will be eliminated. And this includes the equivalent of 9 positions in the industrial division. This is just an example of one of many, many areas impacted. And I highlight this because this is the division that is responsible for writing permits for Minnesota businesses. The same group of work that is addressed by Senate policy language that aims to see our air permitting vacancies filled quickly. So we see the need to rectify these two truths. Without adequate funding to do our work, we must pick and choose which permittees get served and what does not get done. Whose drinking water is protected from leaking tanks and whose is not. Whose cleanup site is addressed and which waits for another day. And we receive questions from you and your colleagues every day, every week about situations in districts. And we know that you and share the concern about being able to see us provide timely responses and seeing constituent concerns about contamination or permit concerns. Those are things we share, and we worry that if we are not funded fully to do the core work, that we will fall further behind. So this is the way that we can make this happen. If the full cost of doing business is not funding, the possessions will be not funded and the work does not get done. We cannot meet the legislator's we cannot meet your timeliness goals and your constituents' expectations without maintaining the staffing levels to support these efforts. So again, we submitted more detailed comments in the letter from this morning, as well as our previous letters. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to provide this brief testimony, and I really want to thank all of the members of the committees in both the House and the Senate, and Chair Ingebretson and Chair Hansen, and we're happy to work with you going forward and happy to answer questions at this point.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Anything you'd like to add or? Nope.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, any questions? What? Senator Weber.
Yes, Commissioner, I just wanted to ask you about, I think in the House language on page R102, if I recall correctly, there's a point where giving you rulemaking authority to deal with treated seeds. And of course, seeds typically fall under the Department of Agriculture, and I personally believe that they should stay there. But what my question for you is, you came out, April 22, yes, with
some recommendations on how to deal with leftover treated seed. So I just wanted to ask you, what do you think your, why do you need authority to do rulemaking for treated seeds?
Chair Ingebrigtsen and Senator Weber, appreciate the question. I will note that we have been working very closely with the Department of Agriculture on this question. The guidance that you saw was developed hand in hand with the Department of Agriculture. We do think we have come up with a solution for treated seeds that would not require rulemaking.
And so, and how much,
Senator Weber?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much leftover treated seed do we have every year?
Commissioner.
Senator Weber, I don't know that off the top of my head, but we can get back to you.
Senator Weber.
Commissioner, have in developing the guidelines, did you deal with the seed, talk to the seed industry as it relates to the issues around the leftover seed they have or seed that's returned by their customers or things like that?
Commissioner.
Chair Ingebrigtsen and Senator Weber, through our partnership with the Department of Agriculture, we touched on the stakeholders that would be impacted.
Senator Weber, follow up.
So that means exactly what, Commissioner?
That Commissioner. The Department of Agriculture took the lead on that, and we worked with them.
As far as communication
yes.
with the seed
yes.
providers?
Yes, Senator Weber.
Okay. All right.
Chair, I'm sorry. Go ahead, follow up.
No, thank you. I guess... What problems do you believe actually exist as from the untreated seed that we have, or the treated seed, excuse me, that we have left over?
Commissioner.
Chair Ingebrigtsen and Senator Weber, I think just at a high level, I'll say that we are very interested in making sure that all solid waste that can't be reused or recycled is dealt with in a way that isn't contrary to the MPCA's mission, which is protecting human health and the environment. And neonicotinoids are a substance which have been documented to be of concern. And so making sure that we are responsible in disposal is something we're interested in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I look at the rulemaking that MPCA already does, I'm probably not very interested in giving them any more authority, let's put it that way, to do more. So, thank you.
Point well taken. Representative Vice Chair Hansen, to that point.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. And Senator Weber, we had actual testimony in the House. We've had it for several years, where we had Minnesota seed producers come and testify that it is a problem on what to do with treated seed that is returned to them. We had testimony from Nebraska, where there is a ethanol plant that was burning unused treated seed, and some of that treated seed came from Minnesota and throughout the Midwest. So yes, it is a problem, because the issue is not, and the challenge and the reason we're going to rulemaking is that this particular question, this very question you asked of whose responsibility it is, has been ambiguous. It's taken a year for them to work out who had what, because the seed law, you're correct, the seed law, when you're using the seed, is clearly within the Department of Ag. But when does the treated seed that is no longer being used become solid waste? Because solid waste is under theirs. So when does that happen? So it's a problem not only for the farmer or the gardener, but also for the seed producer. So we actually had seed producers come and say, we need help on this because it's unclear. And I can provide you with those contacts if you'd like.
Members, any other questions of the commissioner? I'm sorry, I got to make sure I'm watching my screen here. Representative Woswick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the points that I brought up earlier that I just wanted to maybe get some more information from the MPCA now, or if you need time to look this up. But one of the things so I'm interested in PFAS, been working on PFAS for a couple of years, and we have several PFAS provisions in the House version of the bill to ban the use of PFAS in certain products, among other things. And so I was just curious, part of the whole comprehensive plan, so there was the the PFAS blueprint that was released a few years ago, and then the monitoring sort of draft plan. And I'm wondering, I know one of the things the Senate bill does is requires the PCA to pay for the PFAS monitoring, and I know I've talked about this with the agency before. Do you have any sense for how much that monitoring would actually cost the agency if you were required to do that for all of the facilities that would be under this umbrella?
Okay, members, I want to stay focused on the bill itself. So, Commissioner, can you help us?
Chair Ingebretson, yes, I believe I can provide a question to Representative Walzwick's answer or question. So we have estimated, based on the monitoring plan that we put out, that if the agency was required to cover the costs of all of the monitoring that is required for those almost 400 facilities, it would be $2.89 million. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Just the public facilities. So it would be additional dollars for if we had to cover all of the privately owned facilities as well. And we can follow up with that amount.
Yeah, I'd be very interested in finding out what that bill would be. Thanks.
Thank you.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wasilek was bringing up the issue that I was wondering about, too. Commissioner Kessler, I appreciate your very straight talk about the need to fund the agency that takes care of both the stakeholders that have been referenced as well as the people and the water and the land that are impacted by stakeholder activity. We have this recurrent historical problem, I think, of sort of not holding industry accountable for the damage that has been done in various ways, and PFAS is a more recent example of that. And it strikes me that it's odd that we're asking the government agencies to pay for monitoring something that industry is creating. Thank you, Chair Hansen, also for clearing up about neonicotinoids, which have extensive scientific evidence about the damage that they do. I don't think that it's Commissioner Kessler's beliefs. I think it's scientific evidence that we have about the impact of neonicotinoids. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. There's no further questions. We're going to move along, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. We're looking forward to working with you.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Jasty. We'll hear from Bowser. Director Jasty, welcome to the committee. And I believe the House has to get called under or be under call shortly, Mr. Chair.
We convene at 3:30. But we have a little bit of flexibility on that, so
right.
If we could be prompt.
Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. John Jasky, Executive Director, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I won't repeat some of the things that have already been said, and I also, you know, we have a letter that was in your packet that we sent on Friday, so that should include most of the specifics, but let me just highlight a couple of things. As Commissioner Kessler just mentioned, you know, some of the things that are in our proposal from the governor include the ability to use these dollars to leverage additional federal funding, right? And if we don't have the state money, we will have no federal funding to come with it, because these grants that the federal government provides for programs, and I'll highlight two of those under the water storage and soil health provisions, require a state or a partner component to get the federal funding to come to Minnesota. So I think I highlighted already in previous testimony the benefits of our water storage efforts and the soil health practices on the landscape. These are voluntary, very practical things that we can do for multiple benefits for soil health. You know, we look at climate benefits as well as water quality and soil productivity. These practices are all voluntary, and we've seen very meaningful results thus far. There's a lot further to go. As we know, there's a very low adoption rate, and we believe that we can accelerate that greatly with some state funding, again, to get the federal funding to go with it. The water storage practices are in the same category. There's a couple of federal programs. We've got some acronyms that I can mention, RCPP and PL566, which allow us to take these state dollars and bring federal dollars to Minnesota to hold water on the land and largely in the upper areas of our watersheds. There are also two other provisions that the governor had recommended. One is for a tribal liaison. As we work on these watershed plans, it's ever more important that we engage with the tribal governments and work with them on the things that they can also contribute and benefit from in this work. That was something that was passed into law last year but was not funded. The other one is also in that similar category. We had these unreimbursed costs due to COVID from last year, and those, again, were part of the previous discussion, but were not funded in last year's consideration. And then there are several other things that are in the letter that we also believe are important that could be considered either as part of a Senate or House provision, and I'll just highlight two of those that were mentioned earlier. Representative Hansen talked about CREP and the federal leveraging that goes with that, and we also heard from Representative Morrison on the 404 assumption assessment continuation, and so both of those things could also be accomplished with the conference committee's work on those areas. Mr. Chairman, members, I will stop there and take any questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Jashke. I think, a number of the agencies were able to get COVID relief from AARP money last year. Senator Ingebrigts and I wrote a couple of letters on your behalf asking for that. So I know those costs are still there, and I'm hopeful that we could at least find some common ground on that.
Seeing no further questions, thanks for being here. Thanks for working to get this done by the 23rd of May.
We're back again. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And members, before moving on, I know the House has got to go at least sign in. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to make a motion in the interest of getting along here, in interest of moving things forward. Before we do lose the members, I'm going to make a motion that we adopt all provisions and articles. The same provisions in Articles 2 and 5 and adopt the House language for similar provisions in Article 5. I'd make that motion. Representative Hansen.
If we, I would like to look at that motion and what those are. We have our members that are virtual. We are meeting tomorrow. Read through it and make sure that includes all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Stanley, maybe real quickly you could go through it so everybody understands that.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. So what the chair is proposing is to adopt all of the sames from Senate and House Article 2, as well as all of the sames from Senate Article 3 and House Article 5. There are also two similar provisions in the state lands articles, that's Senate Article 3 and House Article 5. And I believe, Mr. Chair, you're proposing to take the House provision on both of those similar provisions.
That's correct.
And I can go through the list, but in the interest of time, unless you want me to do that, I will not do that.
Mr. Chair, we're convening in a minute, so I would like to come back to this tomorrow. I just want to check with my team here, and we'll convene in. Unless you want to recess.
Well, I don't think it. I think it's something that we can certainly move on with. I mean, we're talking about same and similars here. In interest of us, I think sending out a good notion here that we're going to be going somewheres with the differences that we do have. We certainly should be able to come up with. A simple motion like this, and members, I just think we should do that so we don't have to have that to worry about because it's already agreed upon. So. But it does take a motion, and I would ask for a roll call, and I think Chair Hansen, you understand it pretty well, and I think Mr. Stanley described it well, so I would ask that we get this out of the way before we finish up.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Part of my reluctance here is that this would be the only motion that ever occurs for this conference committee. And if I have your word that that is not the case, that we are going to continue to work and we are not just going to be done after there are same similars, I am more open to be supportive.
Absolutely. We're not done by any stretch of the imagination. I don't have any problem with that. Okay, members, any further questions?
If Mr. Stanley could read the again.
Read the motion, Mr. Stanley. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Did you want me to read the list or say the motion again?
Just the motion.
Okay.
Yeah.
The motion would be to adopt the same provisions in Senate Article 2 and House Article 2, as well as the same provisions in Senate Article 3 and House Article 5. It would also be to adopt the two similar provisions that are in Senate Article 3, House Article 5, and to adopt the House version of those two similar provisions.
Ms. Taylor, you understand?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, we should go ahead and take a vote. So if there's no other further discussion, I'm sorry, there is. Who have I got? We're going to have Garrick do that, yeah. So no other further discussion.
Mr. Chair, I call the vote. So I'm, again, on the two same, is it on page R11, 24 through 24.23 through 24.27?
Mr. Stanley, how about that?
Mr. Chair, are you asking Chair Hansen about the two similars?
Yes.
So those are both in Article 5, House Article 5, Senate Article 3. And let me get my list here. The first of those is on R12. It's the Riverland State Forest. And you'll notice that what's different here is just the intro language describing the lands. The lands that are affected are identical in both. So this is in the nature of a technical difference.
Yep.
And then the final similar provision that Chair Ingebrigtsen is proposing to adopt the House language on is the final provision on R20 of Senate Article 3, House Article 5. And here you'll notice that the House just correctly included an and where the Senate had not. So that's another technical.
Yes. Okay.
Support. All right. Thank you. Members, we'll call the roll.
Chair Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni?
Tomasoni votes yes.
Senator Weber?
Yes.
Senator Eichhorn?
Aye.
Senator Egan? Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Morrison?
Aye.
Representative Lippert? Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Representative Heitzman, sorry.
Heitzman, aye.
Heitzman, aye. Representative Walswick?
Walswick, aye.
Senator Eakin?
With 10 yes, and I believe that's zero no, with a nod, the motion prevails. Members, now we have, you're going to have to run, or
yep.
We do have testimony from the Met Council. Do you want to
or wait? We can take him tomorrow.
You want to do that tomorrow?
Let's take the small
Sure, we can do
tomorrow.
That. If that's okay with members, we'll do that tomorrow. Then we stand adjourned. Thank you, members.